Welcome to The Intuitive Customer, where we discuss how you can improve your customer experience and your bottom line. And now, here are your hosts, award-winning influencer and pioneering author of 7 books, Colin Shaw and Professor Ryan Hamilton from Emory University.
At this point, when you're staying calm and you're listening, is you need to pay close attention to what customers are saying. And key thing here is being empathetic.
They immediately pulled all of the packaging off the shelves. You could not buy Tylenol for several months. And they reformulated the packaging. They reformulated the medicine itself, so it was harder to tamper with. They appreciated how terrified people were and didn't try to convince them that that was the wrong response. Colin's too humble to tell you, but that was actually his wedding reception. That's how dedicated Colin was. It was his first wife. That marriage didn't last very long, but still. Yeah.
It did last, mate. It lasted 30 minutes. Ryan, I was in a client the other day, and this is a B2B client. I saw the VP of customer experience, and they looked somewhat stressed. Mm-hmm. And I was asking them, you know, what's the challenge? And they basically, the company had a big outage of their service, and they had a number of people on the phone, and she was trying to manage all of this process, which was a nightmare. Back in the day, I was employed at a telecoms. This is before I started Beyond Philosophy. And I used to run a process called Code Blue, which basically was like the highest level customer escalation that you could have. Okay. I started to talk to her a bit about it and try to help and stuff like that. So I thought today we should talk about the 5 rules for managing a customer crisis. Mm.
I like it. Yeah, no, I remember there was 1 week several years ago where we were late posting the podcast and it riots in the street.
Like there was, yeah.
Burning down buildings. People were upset. Well,
yeah, both of our listeners were involved, weren't they?
Very angry. Very angry.
They couldn't go to school the next day and everything, could they?
Even the best run companies, things are going to go wrong. And most companies are not the best run companies. So
Yes. I'm calling this a crisis because I think it's sort of, for me, it's like I wanted to talk a bit about like the next level up to a complaint. Okay. Same rules to a certain extent apply. Well, to a large extent apply. But as you rightly say, it is surprising how many organizations don't plan for it. It's a bit like COVID, I think. In England, they've got this COVID inquiry at the moment, which is basically looking into all the government actions during COVID and rightly so, I think it's a good thing, you know, trying to learn from what happened and what should we do next time. And, you know, one of the things that's coming up is I think somebody had a plan, but everybody just ignored it.
Oh, that sounds right. Yep.
Well, or it was, to be fair to them, I think it was actually a plan, but it was a plan for flu rather than this. So let's go through these 5 rules and let's talk about all this. The first rule is have a plan.
Smooth transition.
Yeah. Have a plan and have a process. Okay. The important thing here for me is the way that you look at the building of that plan. Okay. You know, when you start talking about customer complaints, I always consider a customer complaint as free market research. Okay. What you do know is that you will have a problem at some point. The issue becomes, what do you do about it when it comes, when it happens? And have you got a plan and have you practiced it? Okay. Because again, that's another big issue. I always remember, I'm going to show my age now again, when we were coming up to Y2K. Were you involved in Y2K? The millennium changeover and...
I was still in college.
I'm showing my age now, mate. I didn't realize you were that young. There you go.
I'm wise beyond my years, Colin.
All right. It was really interesting because we actually war gamed it. So I was, again, back at the telecoms. We were worried that the whole telecoms network was going to come down. Again, put it into context and just think about the telecoms side of it. Banks rely on it.
Oh, yeah. No. You guys were more worried than most, I assume.
Yeah. Retail networks, data systems, the cloud is run on communications, obviously, and all that type of infrastructure. So it's somewhat worrying when something like that goes down. The point I'm trying to make here is that you should have a plan, but the plan needs to live. And therefore, I think that one of the good things I experienced was we used to practice the plan. So it wasn't a question, probably a bit like the COVID plan where, you blow off the dust, you go, page one, okay, what is it we do? People need to be able to move into action quickly because if it is a crisis, it's a crisis. And that means you need to establish roles. You need to turn around and say, this is your job. When we are in here, this is your job. You need to be able to brief people on their job. You need to war game it. And literally what I mean by that is you should be saying, okay, let's now pretend that this has happened. And I'm not going to suddenly call you into a nice cozy meeting where this has happened. I'm going to suddenly do a dress rehearsal with you on this, particularly when you're establishing it. And when I was at the telecoms, I was the key person leading this Code Blue, but it used to involve all of the hierarchy, literally from the chairman of the board all the way down. So, and everybody knew what their job was and what they needed to do and when they would get involved and all the rest of it. Make sense?
Yeah. If I could add 2 points to that, I think that the Y2K parallel is a good one because that was one of the rare instances where we all knew it was coming, right? So people were warning about this potential flaw in our data systems and operating systems. And we had, months or more to kind of come up with a plan. And so people took it very seriously. They saw the deadline coming. That's great. That's also not the way this typically works, where we're going to be facing a threat of an unknown type, and it'll come at a time when we're not expecting it. We can still apply some of those lessons, though, right? We know that something's going to go wrong. Something will go wrong at some point. And so can we develop a series of plans? And then to your point, can we also develop time carved out to figure out how we're going to act upon these plans if and when that day comes? The second point that I would want to emphasize in terms of what you made was this idea of roles and responsibilities. There's all kinds of research showing that when given direction, people perform admirably, and that a big problem in a lot of crisis situations is people freeze or panic. And so, you've got some people running off in one direction, other people running off in another, and then a lot of people just kind of sitting around waiting for somebody to tell them what to do. If we have in place a chain of command, if we know like who's supposed to be responsible for what, it just makes the response so much faster and so much more coherent.
Yes. No, absolutely. What we do know is something will go wrong, to build on your point. So it's not like, well, it's not going to happen to us because it will. Okay. I've spent most of my life in the B2B side of the house. The banks obviously don't just rely on one network. They build in redundancy into their capabilities. So they have, separate lines going to separate buildings in case this happens or that happens. But, even when it goes down, I remember some of these ones when you were literally taking out a whole retail network, which meant that they couldn't trade basically. So that suddenly becomes somewhat serious, you know. And within that, I think the other important thing that I would say here is within that establishing of the roles, you need to empower the teams and the people to make the decisions. So it's a bit like normal rules don't apply, you know. You can't now go off and go, well, hold on, I've got to now go and brief my boss to get their permission for me to be able to do this. No, this is now the chain of command that happens when there's a customer crisis. The normal rules don't apply. There are special rules, and that includes the empowerment of the team to make decisions. The other thing I would say here, which I think is important in this planning, is you should tell your customers. Yeah, you know, I think it is really important that when you get a new client on board, that you can tell them, if you're providing them with some form of service like that, where you basically go, look, we don't want things to go wrong. We've planned for things not to go wrong. This is what we've done, blah, 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 blah. But it could be a hack. It could be anything, you know. But this is what we are going to do if that happens. This is what you should expect. And I believe that, you know, you go up in customers' estimations if you have those things in place. Have you ever heard of the service recovery paradox?
Yes. Is that where a service failure leads to better customer relationships afterwards?
Absolutely, mate. Yeah, well done. And I think it's really true. I think that you can build a relationship with a customer if you deal with a critical situation well. And even if that's, you know, your own making, clearly people don't want to be put in those situations. If you deal with it well, most people know that things happen. You know, we had people building infrastructure that would dig up a communications line. So nothing to do with us, but they suddenly dug up this communications line, which has stopped half the traffic to a major city, or, you know, the half of the communications traffic to a major city. You're then faced with simple things like, how do we physically get there and physically put the cable in the ground to do it? And, you know, I think what you find is customers do understand those things. They can be sympathetic. They want their bloody problem fixed, don't get me wrong, but they do understand that things go wrong. So it's important to understand that if you deal with it well, then you can go up in estimations of customers. Let's build on what you were saying, because that leads us on to item number two. And item number two is, once you've got all of that, you need to stay calm and listen. So whoever's taking the query, or whoever's taking the complaint or the escalation or whatever else, you need to listen to the client, and you need to understand the impact that they're having. And one of the other things for me is you need to understand that their jobs could be on the line because of the problems as well. And this is not about apportioning blame. This is not about saying, well, you shouldn't have done that, or you shouldn't have done this, or I told you that was going to happen if this had happened, etc. That type of thing is for discussion afterwards. You need to stay calm and listen and apologize. Make sense?
Yeah. The importance of apologizing and showing empathy really can't be underemphasized here. A lot of the problems that happen from service failures and customer crises are emotional responses. People respond really poorly when they feel like they've been wronged. And if we duck our heads and try to blame other people or try to blame a situation, that just results in an even worse emotional response and an even worse kind of service failure.
I've said to many people going through this type of process is, you know, let's not apportion blame and whose fault this is now. We'll look at that afterwards. Let's just get you up and running again. Let's not worry about it. And it's what you typically find is there's Chinese whispers. and people get the, to mix my metaphors, people get the wrong end of the stick. They say one thing in the heat of the moment, and you shouldn't react to that. I also think you've got to, at this point, when you're staying calm and you're listening, is you need to pay close attention to what customers are saying. And key thing here is being empathetic and collecting all the necessary details to be able to go away and come up with a comprehensive solution. And it could even be that it's not even comprehensive solution. It could be, what is it we need to do to get you over the hurdle? So in other words, it could be a phased approach that you need to go to, or is there a critical region that we need to focus on? Yeah. Is there a critical element of this that we need to focus on more than trying to solve everything? Because solving everything could take 2 or 3 days, whereas actually the main problem is you could actually get resolved within a day if you knew what it was. So asking that type of questions.
I teach the case of, this is a gruesome case, but the Tylenol poisoning case in the US from the 1980s.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Some evil person tampered with some Tylenol bottles and put strychnine in there and ended up killing some people. It's a case that's taught in business schools because Tylenol responded to it so well as a brand. And one of the key things that they did was express empathy. They didn't try to explain to people that, you know, this isn't a real risk. It's, you know, it's not that big a deal. They immediately pulled all of the packaging off the shelves. You could not buy Tylenol for several months. And they reformulated the packaging. They reformulated the medicine itself, so it was harder to tamper with. They appreciated how terrified people were and didn't try to convince them that that was the wrong response. They said, you know, we have families too, and we are also very upset by this, and we're going to do everything we can to fix it. And so they came out of that very, very well, in part because of the overwhelmingly empathetic response that they had. Colin and I are always looking for new opportunities for you as the listener to contribute to the show. We love hearing from you and hearing what problems you want solved and what opinions you have. So we've developed a new feature called None of Us Are As Clever As All of Us. Colin, do you want to explain that briefly to our listeners?
Yeah, we're very conscious that Ryan and I do not have the monopoly on good ideas. We sure you have some great ideas, that you've got some great opinions. You may even have a new report that you want to share with us. So all we want you to do is to click on the link below and submit your thoughts, and then you can appear on the show.
So we want to hear from you if you've got something to tell us. We also still have our pickle feature, which is where you can ask us for help. So if you've got a pickle you need solved, you can submit an audio recording of that. You can send us an email and we'll answer your problem. Or if you've got a great idea, you can send us a video for our None of Us Are As Clever As All of Us. But Colin, there's a new feature I want to add to this regime, this list of ways that people can participate, which is I'm going to encourage our listeners to just show up at your house. If you want to, just knock on Colin's door. He'll give you access to his computer, to his microphones, and you can tell us in that way whatever you want to tell us.
I don't know if you know, mate, but I'm actually moving to your house. So it won't be my house that they'll be knocking on.
We've got to end this advertisement right now.
The third rule for me is be honest, sincere, and empathetic. All too often, people want to not tell the customer the complete truth, and they want to hide something because they know that it's going to upset the customer even more. And in my experience, you need to be totally honest and transparent. And if that does upset the customer even more at that point, then it is, I was going to use the word worthwhile, but it is the right thing to do. And let me give you an example. I always remember having a situation where a line had broken to one of the cities in the UK, and we needed to get an engineer to the site, but it was a long way away and it was in the middle of nowhere.
I'm sorry, you said a line, like a communications line. I thought you said a lion had broken
in. Oh, a lion.
What is happening in England, Colin?
Did the lion come out of a magical wardrobe
from Narnia? Is that
no? The problem was that with the communications down, all the cages opened because they didn't have any remote locks on them.
Wow, that lion did not need a communications line. Sorry, a telephone line went down.
Yeah, and the elephant couldn't make any trunk calls anymore.
That was uncalled for. That was not necessary.
So anyway, be sincere, be honest, tell the customer exactly what's happening. Then leads us me on to probably the most important aspect of this, in my view. The fourth rule is communicate. Okay. One of the most powerful things that we did when we did this Code Blue thing was we spoke to the customer every hour, even if there was no progress. So in the case of the engineer going to this site, I remember saying to the customer, well, I'm sorry, this is going to take them 3 hours to get there. You know, they literally can't get there any faster. And having three calls going, yep, well, they're still on their way, you know. And in other words, there's not much to talk about. But being clear that the next call was going to be in an hour and we would all get back on the line. And it's not just me on the line, by the way. It was the whole escalation team. So the customer could see all of the various different parts of the organization. And they could see that it was my responsibility to coordinate all of that. But they could also see there was nothing physically else that they could do. Make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great one.
I think the other part of that for me was that I'm sort of embedded within this, and this could probably apply to in each of these cases, internally and externally, is showing the commitment of the organization to the customer and the commitment of the team to the customer. Again, I remember, as I just remembered, that when we were doing this with this particular client, I was actually at a wedding in Scotland and I was coming out of the wedding reception every hour to talk to the customer. And this was like on a Saturday night, and the customer could see that everybody was going that extra mile to get things up and done. And I think, again, that's an important aspect. It wasn't saying, tough luck, Mr. Customer. We're leaving you now because it's Friday night at 5 o'clock and everybody's knocking off now.
Colin's too humble to tell you, but that was actually his wedding reception. That's how dedicated Colin was. It was his first wife. That marriage didn't last very long, but still. Yeah.
It did last, mate. It last 30 minutes because I had another call to go to.
I don't want to simplify our five rules here. These are very nice, but I would suggest that a lot of them do root back through empathy, right? I mean, the reason that you want to listen is in part because listening shows great empathy, recognizing you don't understand the full story and that you need that information. The reason that you want to be sincere and honest is because that's what you know your customer wants. And the reason that you communicate so thoroughly and so often is because you know that that's what you would want if you were on that side. And that shows great empathy as well.
Yes. No, absolutely. And the last rule is review and resolve. Once it's resolved, once you've gone, yeah, okay, you're now up and running, make sure that you conduct a proper review. Make sure that the customer is involved. Make sure that a proper report is written and presented to the client. And here's the key, with what you're going to do differently next time, okay? And sometimes it can be, well, actually, just this set of circumstances led to this and there's nothing we could have done about it. In other words, if somebody's put through a bloody digger through the line, there's very little you can do about that. What people want to see is, given all those things, then have you taken action? looking at it from a left brain perspective, a logical perspective, is now the key to do it.
So this is good advice for the organization. You want the organization to improve and to, you know, respond better next time. But you put an interesting spin on it, which is this can also be an important step in the customer experience management. So if you follow up with the customer on the problem afterwards, again, it shows empathy. It shows that you care about this and value what they have to say. I recently developed a new class and taught it for the first time this last semester. And so at the end of the semester, I actually held a focus group with the students in the class and just said, like, essentially the message was, look, it's too late for you. Like, the class has already happened, but I'm going to be teaching this class again in the future. So what can you tell me about what I can do better to improve the experience of future students? Which doesn't make a lot of sense, right? Like, if I mess some things up, if I taught some cases that weren't very good or some lecture topics that weren't very good, if I structured the class poorly.
How many days were you talking about it? Because I'm sure they had a lot to say.
They had a lot to say. No, the class went very well, but they had a lot of great suggestions. But that shouldn't matter, right? Like, they already had to endure the bad thing. If anything, they should wish that pain on other people as a form of
at least they've got to go through the same problems that I had.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, this is why you want your kids to have to walk uphill in the snow both ways to school also, so they can learn care.
Sure.
But that wasn't what happened. They had a lot of great suggestions. They were motivated to improve the experience for future people. And I think that's true of customers as well, oftentimes. Like, they appreciate being listened to. They appreciate being part of the solution going forward, even if it won't improve their future experience, but they know that it will for somebody else. And I think it's a really important part of this process that may be overlooked.
I agree with you. And it is for customer complaints. I mean, how many complaints have you given where you don't know what the organization's ever going to do about it after the complaint's been resolved?
If anything.
And I would suggest it's most of them. Yeah. And when you've got a large complaint, a large escalation like the ones we've been talking about here, it's more incumbent upon you to learn from that. And even the team internally to learn about how they dealt with it. So, you know, was the communications between us better? Did we blame the customer too much? Or, you know, were we being protective of this part of the organization? Or usual stuff, basically. And I don't think that happens enough. So we hope that you don't get into those situations with your customers, but I'm sure you will. So please remember, you do have to have a plan in place and a process in place. And remember the way to look at it as being some free research, but make sure that you empower the team, establish the roles, inform the client, do all those things we've talked about. With that, we look forward to talking to you next week. Cheers, everybody. See ya. Thanks very much for listening to the show today. We really hope you've enjoyed it. And if you have, it would be really great if you could leave us a review.
This has been The Intuitive Customer with Colin Shaw and Professor Ryan Hamilton. But it doesn't end here. Just go to beyondphilosophy.com/podcast to find all of our shows, access free tools and resources, and subscribe, won't you? That way you'll never miss a show. That's beyondphilosophy.com/podcasts. We look forward to talking with you next time on The Intuitive Customer.